Hello and welcome to the sports news. It's Monday, December 5th, 2022, and your reader today is Bill Sally. As a reminder, Radio Eye is a reading service intended for those who are blind or who have other disabilities that make it difficult to read printed material. Today's first article is entitled, Kentucky Basketball Holds Off Michigan in London for First Signature Win. Three Takeaways. This article is written by Ryan Black of the Louisville Courier-Journal. Kentucky basketball needed this in the worst way. UK owned a 5-win, 2-loss mark on the season entering Sunday's game against Michigan in London, England. But the second number meant more than the first. That's because the two losses came against the only two name-brand opponents Kentucky had faced, Michigan State in Indianapolis and Gonzaga in Spokane, Washington. But the Wildcats scratched and clawed against the Wolverines to take a 73-69 victory at the O2 Arena, ensuring the long trek back to Lexington would be one of revelry and celebration instead of disappointment and soul-searching. It's hard to be more balanced than Kentucky, 6 wins, 2 losses, was offensively. All 5 starters, forwards Oscar Tshiebwe and Jacob Toppin, guards Kaysen Wallace, Antonio Reeves, and Sevier Wheeler, scored at least 10 points. Wallace had 14, 5-for-8 overall, 4-of-4 on threes, including a key triple with 1 minute 11 seconds to go to extend UK's lead to 71-66. Toppin matched Wallace with 14 points of his own. Tshiebwe posted another routine double-double with 13 points and a game-high 14 rebounds. Wheeler and Reeves had 11 points apiece. Wheeler also had 7 assists, which led all players Sunday. And Wallace, the star freshman, once again stuffed the stat sheet, adding 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 block, and 1 steal to go with his 14 points. Star center Hunter Dickinson led the way for the Wolverines, 5 wins, 3 losses, scoring a game-high 23 points on 10 of 22 shooting. He also grabbed 9 rebounds, the top total on the team. Jet Howard, Michigan coach Juwan Howard's son, had 16 points. Guard Kobe Bufkin ended with 11 points, but he scored just 2 after halftime. There are few players in the country who can claim to be better than Dickinson, even fewer who play in the front court. Yet Tshiebwe, who won every major National Player of the Year award last season, is part of that select group. Dickinson outscored Tshiebwe by 10, 23-13, playing 4 more minutes, 35-31, as the Wildcat superstar battled foul trouble. Tshiebwe had the edge on the boards, 14-9, while they fought to a draw in the assist department, dishing out 1 each. Tshiebwe also was outscored in another high-profile matchup with another stellar post player last month, as Gonzaga's Drew Timmy had 22 to his counterpart's 20. This time, however, Shibwe's squad left the court on the right side of the scoreboard. Game after game, Wallace seems to show up, and usually on the biggest of stages. Recall that he tied a single-game program record with 8 steals and lost to Michigan State. Sunday, he was the best player on the floor. Defensively, he had a block and a steal. He made life difficult on Michigan's guards, and half of his 8 rebounds came off missed shots by Wolverines. He also had a sense of the moment. His 3-pointer with the shot clock winding down and the Wildcats ahead by just 2 points, 68-66, in the late stage, arguably was the game's most important play. And note that 11 of his 14 points came in the second half. His potential is through the roof. Of greater import, that potential doesn't go to waste. He shows up on game day. Outside of Tshiebwe, it could be argued no Wildcat has been more consistent this season than Wallace. Next, making life difficult for themselves. Kentucky won by 4. The final margin could have been greater had the Wildcats simply made their free throws. UK was 10 for 20 at the line. Compare that to Michigan, which was 11 of 17. The next article is entitled, Kentucky football gets rematch with Iowa in Music City Bowl, same day as Hoops Showdown. This article is written by Brooks Holton of the Louisville Courier-Journal. The Kentucky football team is once again headed to the Music City Bowl, where a familiar foe awaits, Mark Stoops and company. Playing in their seventh consecutive bowl game, the Wildcats will square off against the Iowa Hawkeyes on New Year's Eve at Nashville's Nissan Stadium. Kickoff is scheduled for noon, 11 a.m. Central Time, on December 31st, the same time as tip-off in the annual men's basketball game between UK and Louisville at Rupp Arena in Lexington. Stoops has already faced and beaten his alma mater on the gridiron once this year. Kentucky topped Iowa 20-17 in the Verbo Citrus Bowl on New Year's Day in Orlando, Florida, after an electrifying 52-yard catch and run by former Wildcat star Wandell Robinson set up running back Chris Rodriguez's go-ahead touchdown with 1 minute 48 seconds to play in the fourth quarter. Linebacker DeAndre Square sealed the victory with an interception on the Hawkeyes' final possession. Tickets became available Sunday afternoon for Kentucky's sixth trip to the Music City Bowl and its fifth since it ended a seven-year postseason drought in 2006. The last time the Wildcats played in the bowl game was a 24-23 loss to Northwestern on December 29, 2017. After clinching a 10-win season with its victory over Iowa in the Citrus Bowl, UK entered the 2022 campaign with aspirations of reaching the Southeastern Conference championship game. Stoops and the Wildcats got off to a 4-win, no-loss start, but their dreams of playing in Atlanta were shattered by the end of October after back-to-back losses against Ole Miss and South Carolina, and getting blown out by Tennessee at Neyland Stadium. Kentucky went 3 wins, 3 losses over its final 6 games, including a historic loss to Vanderbilt and a fourth consecutive win over arch-rival Louisville to finish 7 wins, 5 losses overall, and 3-5 in SEC play. Next, Rich Scangarello. Kentucky football cut ties with offensive coordinator after just 1 season. In the week between the Governor's Cup victory and Sunday's bowl announcement, Stoops has parted ways with 2 coaches, first-year offensive coordinator Rich Scangarello and running backs coach, co-special teams coordinator John Settle. 7 of his players, meanwhile, have announced their intentions to enter the transfer portal. All eyes will be on Kentucky quarterback Will Levis in the days leading up to blank. There literally is a blank in the article. Last week, Levis announced he'll be entering the NFL draft, but said he has not reached a decision on whether or not he will suit up for the Wildcats in the bowl. "I've talked with the coaches and the people I needed to these past couple of days," Levis said November 30th during a Twitter space. "I'll be making a decision on the bowl soon, but nothing is final." Again, the Cats versus Iowa in the Music City Bowl will be aired at noon Eastern Time on Saturday, December 31st. The game will be played in Nissan Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee, and it'll be broadcast on television by ABC and on online live stream at ESPN.com. Radio, it'll be on WHAS 840 AM in Louisville, WLAP 630 AM, and WBUL FM 98.1 in Lexington. The next article is entitled, Kenny Payne, quote, "I'm blaming myself as Louisville basketball falls to 0-8 with loss to Miami." This article is written by Brett Dawson of the Louisville Courier-Journal. You keep thinking it can't get worse. At some point you figure this Louisville men's basketball team will have fallen as far as it can. And then Sunday happens. That's when Miami crushed the Cardinals 80-53 in the Atlantic Coast Conference opener at the KFC Yum Center, dropping Louisville to 0-8 this season. No wins, 8 losses. The Cards trailed by as many as 32 points. They lost for the 4th straight game by 19 or more points, an average margin of 27.8 points in the span. Louisville had its moments against the Hurricanes, 8 wins, 1 loss, 1-0 in the ACC. It showed some early hustle. It used a full-court press in the second half to create a little havoc. It trimmed a massive deficit in garbage time. But the bottom line was as bad as it's been. The Cardinals were slow to close out on shooters. Their turnover woes continued, 19 more of them Sunday, leading to 17 Miami points. And though they made some hustle plays early, those were fewer and farther between as the Hurricanes made a run. Next, coach asks Louisville basketball players, quote, "Have you given up?" Louisville shot 29.8% from the floor and never threatened to make a significant run, much less win the game, after the midway point of the first half. Jalen Withers led Louisville with 12 points. Brandon Huntley Hatfield added 10. Guard L. Ellis had 7 points on 1-for-10 shooting and committed 6 turnovers. Louisville coach Kenny Payne spent a long time in the locker room after the game, and more than 30 minutes passed between the final buzzer and the start of his post-game news conference. "There's not one player in that locker room that I don't love," Payne said. "With that, they have to get better. And because of that, I'm going to take the criticism, the blame. Because I love them, and I want them to figure it out, and I want them to be successful. So I'm blaming myself. I'm not going to blame them. And I hope they have enough pride and fight within themselves to understand what it is to be coached with love." The Hurricanes didn't have and didn't need a single standout star. They got balanced scoring and made do with huge games from potent perimeter duo Isaiah Wong and Nigel Pack. But the key to Miami's offense is its balance, and 3 players scored in double figures. If there was a tone setter, it was forward Norshad Omeyer, who finished with 12 points on 6-of-7 shooting. Against Louisville's bigger front line, the 6-foot-7 Omeyer did most of his damage around the rim, scoring all but one basket on layups and dunks. "You know, we're the 4th tallest team in college basketball, so they say," Payne said. "Well, I don't see shot blocking. I don't see contesting at the rim. That's a problem for me." Leading 24-16 with 8 minutes 57 seconds to play in the first half, Miami reeled off 10 straight points to take a 34-16 lead at the 6:05 mark of the half. The Hurricanes led by double digits for the final 8:15 of the first half, and Louisville never trimmed the deficit under 10 again. By halftime, the Hurricanes were in front 42-23, and Louisville didn't get closer than 20 points behind over the final 17 minutes 12 seconds of the game. It's become a trademark of this Louisville team to falter when its opponent makes a game-changing run. One team seizes control of a game. The Cards have proven incapable of wresting it back. When teams go on those runs, we allow our mistakes to just pile up on each other, and then we start to splinter off, Huntley Hatfield said. "Once we start making those mistakes, we have to come together as a group, talk about what's happening so we don't keep making the same mistakes. And then we just have to take more pride in getting back in transition, running harder, playing harder. And I'm making the same mistakes more than once." Sidney Curry returned to Louisville's starting lineup after 2 games of coming off the bench. The change didn't help his productivity. Curry played 11 scoreless minutes and didn't attempt a field goal. He had as many turnovers, 2, as rebounds. Entering the game, Curry was averaging 1.1 points per game in the paint this season, according to CBBAAnalytics.com. That's down from 6.1 per game last season, when Curry averaged 14.8 paint points over his final 5 games. Louisville guard Mike James, on Payne taking the blame for the Cards' winless start, said, quote, "It's not all on him. He says that because he loves us and he's going to go to war for us. And he's told us that from day one. But it's not all on him. It's on us too. It's not on the coaches. It's on the players. They can't go out there and play for us. So I don't really like when he says that. But that's just the type of guy he is." The next article is entitled, "Is Keg of Nails Back? Cincinnati, U of L, to play in Fenway Bowl." This article is written by Alexis Cubitt of the Louisville Courier-Journal. For the first time since leaving the AAC in 2013, Louisville football and Cincinnati will face off in the Fenway Bowl game at 11 a.m. December 17th at Fenway Park in Boston, according to multiple reports Friday. The Athletic's Cincinnati beat reporter Justin Williams first reported the news. The former rivalry, known as the Keg of Nails, featured 56 meetings between the two teams that dates back to 1929 and spans over multiple conferences, including the AAC, Big East, Conference USA, and Missouri Valley Conference. The Bearcats hold a 30-22-1 lead, though the Cardinals won the last two meetings in 2012, 34-31, and 2013, 31-24, both of which were decided in overtime. Louisville joined the ACC in 2014, ending the annual game. Louisville entered a bowl game after finishing the year with a 7-win, 5-loss record and being fourth in the final Atlantic Division standings with a 4-win, 4-loss mark. The Cardinals turned around a 2-win, 3-loss start by winning 5 of its last 7 games, which included top 25 wins over Wake Forest and North Carolina State. Cincinnati, which will be moving to the Big 12 in the next 2 years, ended the regular season with a 9-win, 3-loss mark, going 6 wins, 2 losses in the AAC for a third-place finish. Bearcats head coach Luke Fickell, however, was hired Sunday by Wisconsin after a 6-year tenure in Cincinnati, going 57 wins and 18 losses. Kerry Combs will serve as interim head coach during the bowl game. The next article is entitled, U.S. Men's National Team Ousted by Netherlands 3-1. This article is written by Nancy Armour of the USA Today. The U.S. men are heading home, stopped short of the World Cup quarterfinals again. A 3-1 loss to the Netherlands on Saturday eliminated the Americans in the round of 16. The same finish as the 2014, 2010, and 1994 squads. The U.S. men's national team has won just one knockout round game since returning to the World Cup in 1990 after a 40-year absence, when the 2002 team reached the quarterfinals. The loss will be a disappointment for the Americans, who were certain their talent and team chemistry could overcome their lack of experience on the world stage. They talked of winning the World Cup, part of a larger mission to change the way the world sees American soccer. But it's clear the U.S. men's national team has a way to go to be considered among the world's elite after being outplayed by the Dutch. The Americans were down 2-0 at the half. The goals by Memphis Depay and Daley Blind, both coming off defensive breakdowns. They managed to pull a goal back in the 76th minute when Christian Pulisic's corner kick got recycled and his cross hit Haji Wright on the back of the leg. The ball ran up Wright's leg and took a wild bounce into the net to cut the Netherlands' lead to 2-1. But the national team got caught napping again in the 81st minute when Denzel Dumfries was left unmarked at the back post. Dumfries saw the opportunity, waving his hand to call for the ball, and Blind found him with a cross that Dumfries put into the far corner. The Dutch players on the bench rushed onto the field, knowing the game was effectively over. The Dutch fans were singing, "Na na 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 na, hey hey, goodbye," in stoppage time. It might have been a very different game had Pulisic, starting 4 days after being subbed off at halftime with a pelvic injury, not missed a gimme in the third minute. Pulisic might have thought he was offside because his shot was off, and Andreas Noppert was able to clear it with a kick save. But the Dutch took the lead 7 minutes later when Tyler Adams and Sergio Dest locked track of Depay after he sprayed the ball wide to Dumfries. That allowed Depay to run unmarked into the penalty box and beat Matt Turner with a rocket of a shot, and the national team was left to play catch-up, unsuccessfully, the rest of the way. Despite the ugly loss, the national team has plenty of positives to take away from this World Cup. The national team was completely rebuilt after the failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. Though it is a young squad, even with Ream, 35, and Sean Johnson, 33, the national team's average age was 25 years and 216 days. It is colossally talented individually, arguably the best the United States has ever had. 17 of the 26 are playing in Europe, and 5 are on teams that are in the Champions League this season. Pulisic was part of the Chelsea team that won the Champions League in 2021. Collectively, they have established an identity that goes beyond American grit. Pulisic is dangerous whenever he's on the field, the kind of offensive threat opponents have to constantly guard against. Defensively, the national team was quick to close down space, offering opponents few opportunities. The USMNT was one of just five teams to reach the knockout rounds without a loss, and they held mighty England scoreless. Depay's goal was their first conceded in the run of play. They've evolved well, Dutch coach Louis van Gaal said before the game. It's a process, and perhaps the USA hadn't expected that from this squad. I think if you watch them play, it's crystal clear they had opportunities, and that's what they've shown us. Given van Gaal's resume, in addition to the Netherlands, he's coached at Ajax, Barcelona, and Manchester United. That's high praise. And for everything the national team said here about winning, their best chance was always more likely to be in 4 years, when the United States co-hosts the World Cup with Canada and Mexico. Pulisic, Adams, Weston McKennie, and Dest will be in the primes of their careers, with Yunus Musa, Gio Reyna, and Brennan Aaronson approaching theirs. It's already a charismatic group that charmed the American public. If the national team can keep developing talent, shore up the center-back position, and identify a true striker, talk of contending in 2026 could be more than just American exuberance. The next article is entitled, quote, "This team is so confident right now." Bengals make a statement by toppling the Chiefs. This article is written by Charlie Goldsmith of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Last week, Cincinnati Bengals head coach Zach Taylor made two statements about what's possible for their season in 2022. He said every team on the Bengals' schedule, quote, had to play us, making the point the Bengals should view themselves as favorites in the AFC. And he said he'd take his quarterback, Joe Burrow, over any other player in the National Football League. On Sunday, as the Bengals beat the Kansas City Chiefs 27-24 at Paycor Stadium, the Bengals became the true frontrunners in the AFC. Burrow proved he's an MVP candidate. After beating a Chiefs team viewed as the best in the AFC, and after winning their fourth straight game, the Bengals are right where they want to be in a season that began with Super Bowl expectations. "We know what kind of guys we have in that locker room," Burrow said. "We've been there, done that. It's December. Coming into January, this is when teams start to separate themselves." All week, Burrow versus Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes had been compared to the rivalry between Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Sunday's game lived up to the hype, with Burrow and Mahomes trading big throws back and forth. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, following a game-changing forced fumble by linebacker Jermaine Pratt, Burrow led a 10-play, 63-yard drive, which gave the Bengals the lead. With clutch third-down conversions, a daring scramble, and a touchdown throw to running back Chris Evans, the Bengals were up 27-24. Mahomes then had his turn to make his MVP case. On third down, facing another unique coverage from Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Aranomo, defensive end Joseph Asai showed his athleticism with the biggest sack of his NFL career to get the Chiefs off the field in the final 3 minutes. Instead of running the ball to run the clock down, Burrow connected with the Bengals' star receiver, who made a loud return in his first game in a month. Wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase kept the offense moving with two big catches, including a 5-yard gain on 3rd and 5. Then on 3rd and 11, with the Bengals needing a first down to clinch the win, wide receiver T. Higgins caught a slant with the defender on his back to clinch the win. "This team is so confident right now that this is what we visualized over the entire week," Taylor said. "This team is playing as well as I'd hoped we'd be playing." The Bengals toppled the first-place team in the AFC. The Bengals' receiver trio was back to full strength and showed how unstoppable they can be. As the clock ran out, Burrow egged the crowd on, revving up a fan base getting ready for another deep postseason run. Chase played in his first game since October due to a hip injury. He immediately gave even more momentum to an offense that was already clicking and even brought more energy to a team that was already rolling. For the first time in Burrow's career, he wasn't the last starter on the Bengals' offense to run onto the field during pregame introductions. This time, Chase got that chance in the spotlight. It was Chase's first game in a month. As he sprinted onto the field, the Bengals' public address announcer shouted, "He's back!" But Sunday wasn't just about Chase's return. It was a showcase for a Bengals offense that took another step closer to full strength. a passing game that looks unstoppable, and a Bengals team that has a case as the Super Bowl favorites in the NFL. "We're just getting started right now," Chase said. "We shouldn't have let them come back and that game get close." For most of the game, the Chiefs double-teamed Chase, who had 266 yards against Kansas City in Cincinnati last season. During the offseason, the Chiefs overhauled their defense to get faster, younger, and better prepared to face offenses like the Bengals. While Chase didn't take over this game from the jump, he opened up the entire offense to even another degree. As the Chiefs anticipated Burrow to throw the ball, running back Samaje Perine, who had the game of his career for the second straight week, made physical runs up the middle and broke tackles for extra yards. Tyler Boyd shredded his defender in the slot on a deep route for a 17-yard reception, which set up a 4-yard touchdown run by Burrow, who made big plays all game as a runner. On the Bengals' next drive early in the second quarter, the receivers drew 2 defensive penalties to get into scoring position, and Higgins caught a slant and dragged an overmatched Chiefs cornerback over the goal line for a 12-yard touchdown as the Bengals took a 14-3 lead. Throughout the game, Chase, Higgins, and Boyd all had moments of brilliance, including a 40-yard catch by Chase, who leapt over a defender to pick up yards after the catch. "Burrow is a heck of a quarterback," Chase said. "He should be in the MVP race. What else do I need to say?" The Chiefs came back because Mahomes and the Chiefs' offense are almost impossible to stop. Kansas City took the lead in the third quarter when a 42-yard pass from Mahomes set up a touchdown run. After the Bengals tied the score at 17, Mahomes threw for a 29-yard completion on third down from the middle of the field and ran for a 3-yard touchdown. On Kansas City's next drive, Mahomes was on the verge of putting the game away early in the fourth quarter. With the Chiefs driving and looking to take a 2-score lead, Mahomes delivered a sidearm pass for a first down to tight end Travis Kelce. As he tried to fight for more yards, linebacker Jermaine Pratt snatched the ball away from him for a momentum-changing fumble. At one point of his career, Pratt wasn't good on passing downs. Since then, he developed a knack for creating some of the most important turnovers of the Bengals season. He added another one to the list by ripping the football loose and getting the Bengals the ball back as they trailed 24-20. 5 minutes later, following 2 clutch third down throws by Burrow in addition to a first down run, Burrow gave running back Chris Evans his first touchdown catch of the season. With that, the Bengals took a 27-24 lead and shut down Patrick Mahomes' final drive. This wraps it up for the sports news for Monday, December 5th, 2022. Your reader has been Bill Sally. Thank you for listening.